Robert Stimler, Reel 5. You were saying earlier on, when you went back to the ghetto after the war, would it still have been a ghetto then?
No, no, the ghetto was finished. It was not the ghetto anymore. I only went to the town which was the ghetto before. Oh, no, no, no. It was not the ghetto. But I didn't go, I didn't even go to the place where the ghetto was on. I didn't. It was too painful for me. When I went to my hometown in 45 after the war, I didn't even look at the place we're living, where the shop was there. I didn't. I just put my head away. I just couldn't. And that time, I didn't think so much about my experience, you know? I didn't. I just took everything for granted, or I didn't want to remember, I was pushing away from my mind. I don't know. I just didn't want to know. I didn't want to know at all. And when I went to my neighbors, when I went to Alexander, they were very, very kind to me. The mayor invited me, and he wanted me to stay there. I should work in the office there, and they wanted to give me a place. But then I thought to myself, I've got such a good memories and bad memories. It will remind me of my parents, the families, because my mother's brother, one of them was, two brothers were living in Alexander with the children, and the older brother had five sons, and, you know, they went to the Kutno that time, and it was too painful for me, and I went back to Legnica, and I thought, I wait till my papers will go through. It was altogether, to me, the whole life became a very big dream.
Do you think, Barbara, that it's possible for anyone to fully understand the Holocaust?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I do not think so. Even Jewish people don't. I don't think so. When I speak to the children, I will show you a little tape afterwards. I was speaking in Lebrogrov, a school called Menning School. There were Roman Catholic girls, and the BBC came. Four of us were speaking, everyone in a different class, and they chose me. They going to listen to my story, and they sat there for over an hour, and the children were asking questions. They were filming the whole lot. Then the following day, it was on the BBC One, after the South East News. It's about 5 minutes. You will see the reaction of the children, their faces. That makes me talk. And the letters I get. The letters I get, I cannot tell you some. One of the few of them wrote to me, what a terrible day life, they've got a terrible life, but listening to my story, their life completely changed now. They look at life completely different. Then I was speaking in a Bryson school. It's a public school. I had 120 students between 17 and 19. They only sent me a card and everybody signed the card. But one student wrote to me a letter that every Saturday they've got lectures, but she has never been to a lecture. Students should still sit so still and listen to every word I said. Because they go walk out and all this. She said she never has been to it. I show you the letter. I mean, it's fantastic. That's what makes me talk. It's killing me, as you can see, but that's what makes me talk. Afterwards, when you go, I take off my contact lenses and I take two paracetamol and I go to bed. Not to bed, I lie down. Just for the rest.
Do you find they have to be of a certain age before they can...
Yes. As you heard my story, I don't think that under 14 children can listen to that story. Because they'd be terribly upset, they'd be coming home crying, and it's not good. It's time when they're 14, 15 to listen to it is enough time. But they definitely do listen to it and does penetrate, because some of them even said, I come home and I told my parents what you went through and all this. it is worth it, because when I come from a school, I get very upset, and then my husband says to me, maybe you should stop it. But when he gets the letters, Barbara, I have to carry on, he says.
It's interesting you were saying earlier on, Barbara, how you often felt protected through all these different experiences, almost as if you had to survive.
Yeah, that's what I said, that as I survive, I'm here on this earth, and I feel that is a reason that I'm here, because I have been a terribly delicate child before the war. And here, if I could withstand sailor fields, standing for so many hours, and hunger, and torment, it is something there, somewhere from God. That's how I think. For some people say, how can you believe in God after this experience? But I said, look, how can you not believe it if you don't know if God is here or not? So, I believe. And you always say, oh, please God, thank God. When I'm in trouble, I put Friday night candles. I always pray to God, thank Him for everything what He gave me. And praying, we should be peace in the world, and we should go along like we are. That's all. That's my motto. I don't know how to think otherwise. But I don't think I could survive if I wouldn't have somebody. If I wouldn't believe in God, I don't think I could survive even now what I'm going through with my children. So I think this is the only thing to keep me going.
How about your sense of Jewishness? You know, having gone through all this anti-Semitism, which really was taken to the ultimate, wasn't it?
Now, even one child at school asked me, what do you feel more, Polish or Jewish? So I answered her, Polish I don't feel at all, because I'm more years in England than I was in Poland. Jewish, I will always feel Jewish. That's how I was born, and I won't have to die like that. I'm not very religious, no. We keep a few holidays where we go to the synagogue, but I write on Shabbat, and Friday night I do put the candles on. Since we're married, what I couldn't even afford to buy the two halas when you make kiddush, I made myself, because I said to them, if we have children, if we will not do it straight away, we will never do it. So Friday night is our night of rest. And the rest, we do what we please. And certain holidays we keep. But look, you live in a country where you have to obey. I mean, we live in England. Like my son, he has a jewelry shop. He opens the shop on the Saturdays and many Jewish holidays. Some very holy holidays he doesn't. He belongs to the Reform Jew, because he feels that he's a hypocrite if he would be belonging to United. But as I saw it by my parents, my father was not very religious. My mother was religious. Though he came from a very religious home, because my grandfather was with a beard, not pious, but beard, and he used to wear the Jewish clothes and all this. But my father wasn't born in Russia. As I told you, he went to Russia, and he was there till the revolution broke out. He was not so religious, because even at school there, to his nuns, I had to go on Saturdays to school, and the Jewish children, the Jewish families didn't like it very much, but my father didn't take notice. He said, this is education, and that's it. Look, if you will live in Israel, you don't have your shops open on Saturdays, and you don't have to write. But we live in a country where we have to, but we have to do what the country requires. That is our point of view, mine and Len's.
The State of Israel, when that was founded, You know, having gone through the Holocaust and this attempt to eliminate all Jewish people, has that got a significance for you?
Very much. Now, I must tell you one thing. I didn't take so much notice from the beginning, because I said to you, I never thought about my past at all. I didn't. I was pushing it away from you. Mind you, I must tell you something. I was under, besides the psychiatrist, when I stopped going to psychiatrist, I was under neurologist. Dr. Kremer in Queensware Hospital, a national hospital. And I had a bit of difficulties with my husband, as far as sex life was concerned. So one of my friends said to me, Barbara, we have to do something about this because he's young and we have to do something. I was under neurologist, the doctor came, and then when I went to him. First when I saw him private, so he said to me, Mrs. Timmer, it's a very long story with you. I don't want your money. I will see you exactly in the national hospital as I would see you private. He was very kind to me. And he gave me some tablets. I should forget my past and I should be more relaxed. But I start forgetting other things, not only my past. So after a certain period, after taking about 3-4 months, I had to stop the tablets. And my memory since then is not so good. It's a fantastic thing how I can remember my past life story. But if I go, let's say I go somewhere and I see a name of the street, you ask me in 5 minutes, I don't know. I don't remember. But my life story is clinging to me. It's in the back of my heart, and I cannot forget it. It's something I can never forget. My husband is a very understanding man, this I must tell you, because he really, in that respect, he suffered with me a lot. Couldn't touch me. It was terrible. When Sir Martin Gilbert, wanted the life story from me, that is the first time, which is about 3 years ago, when Len got to know everything about me. He never knew anything. Oh no. I never, do you know, when I was applying for the money from the Germans, my little boy, Harvey, was about 1.5 years or 2 years old, and he went with me to the solicitor there. He was with me there. I wouldn't dare tell him what the Germans were doing to me. I did not know how he's going to take it. And only 3 years ago, when we wrote the life story to Sir Martin Gilbert for the book, The Boys, he got to know everything. Now he realized now what happened to me. I was afraid to tell him. I didn't tell anybody.
I suppose that experience you had with those Germans that night when they broke into the flat and ripped your neck.
Actually, I forgot to tell you something else. When we were, I'm going back now, when we were hiding ourselves, when we were in one of the Polish camps, it was a farm, and a Pole said to me and to Irma, I will hide you. You go on the, he put us on the loft, he says he's going to bring us food and he's going to hide us. And in the night, 2 soldiers came and they raped us. See, I forgot even to tell you that. You know, it's, and they raped us and then they showed us up from the loft and we had to go again with the Poles. I told you we're going from one place to another. I forgot to tell you this. So I think this all completely at the point. That my sex life was not sex life. And nobody would take me for such, because I was always full of life, even since after the war. Now I'm talking about now when we were going to function, I would enjoy myself and I danced, and God only knows, people thought, oh God, how sexy she is, but.
How about other effects on your health? You know, all that digging you did, for instance. Has that had a long-term effect on you? All the digging you did of those trenches.
I only can think that it could only do my back, nothing else, because my spine is twisted and I suffer with osteoporosis. And the now I explain to you what happened to me. I must have the osteoporosis for many, many years. My back was started to bend for a long, long time, but we thought having the breast cancer, I had radiotherapy. And the doctor used to say to me, the specialist, that when I had the radiotherapy, everything, the tissues, everything is burned there, and my lungs were going in. But it was not that. It is from the osteoporosis, from this digging what I done, that my my spine is bent. But I never said about it to anybody. I never think about it. That's it.
We were talking earlier on about Israel,
yes,
and how it isn't, you know, important to you.
Very important.
Now.
Because, I mean, I must tell you something. England was very good to us, to myself and to my husband, and especially to me. When I come to England, and my cousin took me to the home office, or the Arians office, I don't remember which office, they never asked me for religion. And that is the first time that I didn't have to put on my passport my religion, where in Poland or Russia, that is the first thing they ask. That's what I thought. I couldn't believe it. As I say, England was good to me. If somebody wanted to make a good living in England by working hard and putting their priorities first, everybody could have a lovely living. And if somebody is lazy and waiting for the government to help them, that is just evident. It's too bad. But, as I say, when even I'm in school, I'm telling them that. Because we started with nothing, and we build ourselves up beautiful. Even if I wouldn't have the money from the Germans, we already had our little house, and we had a car, and my husband had a business. Of course, that helped that I could buy a better house. But I was quite happy in the little house. But when the money was there, so I done it. But also, it was also not so easy because it was scribble-scrabble. But if somebody wants to get on, England was a fantastic country to get on.
Have you ever been affected by dreams about your Holocaust experience?
Funny enough, I don't remember ever dreaming about it. Years ago, yes. But lately, I go to sleep and I read a book. A book puts me to sleep. When I stopped taking Valium, the last medication I had was Valium, must be about 8 years ago. And I found out that if I read a book and I put myself the heroine of the book, and I read so long till my eyes are closing and I put my book away and I go to sleep. And sometimes if you go out during the night, I'm always thinking of good things. I try to think of good things. And I go to sleep. I'm pushing away the bad things out of my mind, because if I don't, it's God help me. Even if I'm thinking about my children, it's no good. I can't go to sleep. It's a fight. I sweat, and it's a big fight. Doesn't matter. The family is
If I could finally take you back to Auschwitz, if you wouldn't mind,
because
you've mentioned Mengele several times.
Yes.
What did you know about
him
while you were there?
Nothing. Not a thing.
What was he like?
The most handsome man you have ever seen in your life. Dark, tall. All his assistants were handsome. He was looking for people, the Germans were looking for people with blue eyes and blonde hair, and most of them, they were dark, handsome, tall men, with the heart of a devil. I did not know that he was doing experiments. I knew already that time that they were sending to the gas chamber. But I did not know that Mengele was the devil. After, you see what it is? Somebody asked me, even in the school, they asked me, do I watch any films or television when the Holocaust is on? I said, yes, I do. I sit and cry and I do. Because I was cooked up in one place, but I wanted to know what was over the fence. I did not know. You see what I mean? I did not. Because you see, a lot of girls, if you got up in the morning, they touch the electric wires and they kill themselves. And I couldn't understand why. Maybe they knew something about it. They couldn't live anymore with the fear. The fear, it was the most dreadful thing. Even when I was with my parents, a knock to the door, I feel like I wanted to be sick and I couldn't. It was such a fear I cannot explain to anybody. I didn't fear for myself. I was only afraid for my parents. They shouldn't beat up my father or something like that. Because they used to come and they used to put the place upside down to look for things, for money, for jewelry. and it was incredible to talk about everything, what was really, really happening. And I'll be truthful with you, I would like to write a book. But I need help. Who can help me? That's what I would like to do, to write a book before I die. But I need a ghostwriter. And I don't know if from the Spiral Institute they can help me. I'm going to ask them. Maybe they could help me to get a ghostwriter to help me with writing a book. Because I feel that I should, really. People, even children, said to me, have you got a book written? I said, no, when I'm going to write a book, they still want to know more about me. But you speak, look, we are here how long already? Since 11 o'clock. And I only speak there for an hour. I only speak about the main things. That's all. You know, it just reminded me about this rating. I completely forgot already. And I see myself there. Irma, it was not so bad to say because she was already a married woman and she had a child, as I told you, but with me it was a terrible thing. And when we were in the bar that time, so we are talking quite a lot. There's all day long there and sleeping and talking. And she was putting me wise a little bit about the woman is a virgin, I never knew about it, and you have to be careful when you should marry before you go with a man and all this. She was putting me all wise like my mother would do it. My mother wouldn't because she was too old fashioned. She wouldn't, although in looks my mother was not. She used to make herself up and all this, but her hair, she was going to the hairdresser every 2 weeks and all this, but as you can see how her hair looked and all this, but I was very, very ignorant about all these things. So I had a terrible blow when it happened. And that's it. After the war, I went to see Lebedzinski's, you know. I went to Kutna and I went to see Lebedzinski's, the Polish couple were hiding us there, they kept us there. They're both alive, but Christina, their daughter, got married and she was living in Germany. So I didn't want to ask too many questions. Maybe it's too painful for them as well, you see, so I didn't want to ask many questions. And as I told you, I'm in touch with two school friends in Warsaw, and one of them sent me these photos, these valuable photos, which I treasure them.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Barbara, for telling me about your Holocaust experience, because I do realise it can't be easy. But we appreciate it very much, and thank you.
Very welcome. Very, very welcome. It is my pleasure. And I'm very, very grateful that people like you are doing such a fantastic work for us.
Thank you, Barbara. Thank you.
I don't want to...